Oh, this is something Father's Day related a little bit. When I was younger, I had a Persian, a brother and a sister. They were Persian. They were my friends. Mm-hmm. And they always called their dad Baba.
Yeah.
And
that's what we do as Persians.
Like, but they called their mom. And like, so, and I was just like, oh,
is
maybe.
Is this my family?
No. But it was just like, Bubba, and like, and the mom called him Bubba. Like, everyone called him Bubba. So I was like, oh, his name's Bubba, I guess. And one time I was over at their house and they, you know, he gave me something or was offering me something. And I go, oh, well, you know, trying to like impress and show that I'm a polite girl.
Who listens
like,
very
oh,
well.
Oh, well, thank you, Mr. Bubba. And everyone laughed. And for the, you know, for everyone who's not Persian in the room, Bubba means
father.
Father.
Yes,
so I essentially said, thank you, Mr. Father.
Salem today.
And I'm Ashley. I'm going to be your Binks.
Thank you for tuning in.
Thank you for surviving, Mommy Dearest.
Yes.
And we all
oh
made
my gosh. It.
Join the support group if you haven't already.
Yes, do that. We'll provide a hotline. Thank you for getting this far with us. This is our fifth episode.
Fifth episode.
So exciting.
That's halfway to 10.
Yeah. I have a couple little notes from last week.
Okay.
Mostly corrections on my own behalf that I later discovered that I was wrong about. The one big thing I did not get right, and this actually kind of makes a difference in how we discuss the movie a little bit, I had said that she was close with Philip Terry mm-hmm. and that they adopted a child. They were actually married, and I totally didn't, like, put, I don't know why I didn't put that together. But that was, like, how she was able to adopt.
She was married.
Yeah, whereas in the movie, they act like she had not been married at the time.
Yeah, it was like a deal he did.
Yeah, it was Greg Botzer did this whole deal to like, he like schmoozed in order to get her to like adopt. Anyway, random, not important anymore, but definitely important when you listen to the last episode.
Well, funny that what you brought up, that correction has to do with marriage, and this movie is about
divorce. It's not happy at all, but that's how it is. Oh, also random, we discovered that Helga, who was yelled at for not cleaning underneath the plants, is Large Marge from Pee Wee Herman.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? That's crazy.
She's Large Marge?
She's Large Marge. And then last but not least, I posted in the show notes about the B.O.B. on Mommy Dearest, because we found the old VHS B.O.B., which is the back-of-box description, as we like to call it here at Salem and Binks Present. And the older one was the one that we read in the episode. It was quite serious tone. Mm-hmm. It was very, like, it was a little bit dramatic, you know. We kind of made fun of that, but we also could get a sense that there was drama intended in that description. But then I also shared a recent B.O.B. from, like, the DVD cover, and it's like a 180. It's super, it's like trying to promote it as that super campy, like, classic, iconic, bizarre movie. And you're just like, okay, like, they totally, it's like you were saying.
Yeah, Paramount's PR team went, like, into overdrive. Yeah. To like, yeah.
So,
a lot of late nights at the office.
Totally. This is the result of many a late night at the office, results as can be seen in the show notes of episode 4. So, which is located in the Salem and Binks blog. So
check it out. Nina, tell everyone what movie we watched this week.
This week, we watched Mrs. Doubtfire.
The best movie to watch for Father's Day.
It is classic. It is iconic. It's one of the biggest movies we've done so far,
and probably one of my favorite Robin Williams movies.
Oh, yeah. This is arguably, like, some would call this his best, for sure. And everyone, I think, especially, like, in our age range, has their personal favorites, you know, that's just kind of what they nostalgically prefer. But this is one of those ones that was very, like, very dear to my heart.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved the performance. Loved this movie. We'll always love this movie.
It was funny when I was, like, telling people about, like, oh, what movie we're watching for Father's Day. I was like, oh, we're watching Mrs. Doubtfire. And they were like, really? Like, not Father of the Bride or, like, any of these other? I was like, no, I mean, at its core, Mrs. Doubtfire is about a father and his love for his kids and, you know, the miles he goes in someone else's heels to be with his children.
Yes.
And yeah, I'm really glad we watched this because I think a lot of people, like what you said, this movie really strikes a chord with them, especially children of divorced parents. I was just talking through with a couple people, like they really love this movie and it really...
Oh, yeah. I think... And then we'll talk about how this movie is not only about divorce, but what it says about divorce and what it says about divorce to children who are having to go through all that. Movie, like, it had the heart to really paint it in a very realistic but still quite heartfelt manner. I thought it did a great job of letting people know, look, it's real. This happens. It's not up to you. It's not your fault. It's sometimes people literally are better off not being together. You know, it's a sad reality. It's literally, as a kid, it's like the last thing you want sometimes. I think we always, as children, like, you know, you'd have hope that everyone's just together and happy and it's picturesque, but at the end of the day, I like that this movie still has a very happy ending, even though
it's not what you would, I think what we expected a happy ending would be, but it does end on, I think, a positive, or
positive.
They had, positive.
Yeah.
I mean, divorce sucks no matter what, but it's like.
Unfortunately, it really does, and we'll get into more detail with it.
And of course, the late great Robin Williams, so good in this role.
I love some good tidbits that I found in the behind-the-scenes footage that I found so interesting. Just talking about how it was to work with Robin Williams and how it was to work with Robin Williams as Mrs. Doubtfire. And it's the stuff of legend. Like, he not only went above and beyond to just look completely differently. I mean, the makeup department, they took care of this man. Beyond. And they were purposely like, we want it to be like, you know, you don't just throw on a wig and like talk funny. And it's the silly thing that everyone goes, oh, you know, she would know.
It's obviously a man dressed up. Like, no, he looked good.
He looked like, so good.
Yeah.
And like his own kids did not, like his own son did not recognize him.
Yeah, Zach William.
Tell me what your initial impression, Ashley, was of Mrs. Doubtfire.
Okay, I remember watching this movie as a kid and just finding it completely hysterical and sad.
Yeah.
And sad. I mean, it's a story of a family that's, you know, coming apart and this adjustment period. And even though I'm not from a family of divorce, but it's just, it was, you know, it still resonated with me.
Yeah.
And now watching it as an adult, it's like I can see it from an adult's perspective how, like, you know, divorce, it affects the kids, but, like, you know, those involved, too. But just the talent of Robin Williams is just...
unbelievable.
And his serious moments, too, are so good and just so genuine. And I was reading somewhere that the director... Chris Columbus had to have 3 cameras on Robin Williams at all times because he would just improv and go off the cuff and he was so worried he would miss something.
Yeah.
And
I heard that he said he would like compare it to shooting a documentary. Like, you just have to get those real moments right when you have to get them, so you need enough cameras. Oh,
that's so good. Yeah.
And it's like, that what a cool mindset to have.
Yeah.
And not only are you giving that actor tons of freedom, but you're respecting the hell out of them, knowing that whatever they're doing is probably going to be better than what I'd come up with. So I'm just going to, like, watch them do their thing and make sure I capture it. Like, and what a difference it made, because a lot of times, not only was he capturing Robin's performance and his improv, but he's capturing the reaction shots of other people around him in any given scene. It's just hilarious.
What a dream it must be to work with Robin Williams. Like,
oh my gosh.
Like,
that would have been incredible. That would have been so amazing. My initial reaction to this film, I mean, I first watched it way back as a kid. This was like a 90s flick for me.
Mm-hmm.
This was a favorite for my brother and I. I have a lot of memories of, like, either renting this from the video store or watching it anytime it was on TV. This was just one of our classic jams. We just, you just don't get tired of laughing at it. I still watch it and laugh so hard.
Same.
Just those classic moments and those classic lines. I feel like you definitely remember those big moments, but then there's a couple little ones every time you watch it that you forgot about. And it just gets you. Oh my God, I love it so much. And of course, like you were saying, when you're an adult now and you rewatch it, you tend to learn a lot more from it. And it is sadder, you know?
Yeah.
But I think in a way it almost makes me appreciate it more because I get, I just get more where it's coming from.
Yeah.
Also not a child of divorce, but I look at this and I just think, what a great project this was. What a great film it is to teach children and families, you know, to normalize what so many people go through.
Yeah.
And just let them know that it's okay. You know, I like what he says in the very, very end as he's, you know, Mrs. Doubtfire on the TV and it's playing. And he says, as long as there's love, you know, it works out. Obviously, I'm paraphrasing. But yeah, he, it wraps up really well. It's just, it is what it is as divorce goes. You know, it's that realism that you can't escape, even if things are funny. I was saying to Ashley off mic earlier, it's a bit of like a, it's got like a straight absurd kind of thing. Like typically we would say that for like a two person scene or something. But in this, it's just more like tone, because the absurd thing is you have a man in drag essentially so that he can see his children and babysit them. And the straight part was like, oh, but the reality is like, it's just so real. This is what people go through every single day.
Yeah, they can't see their kids every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's just so sad and hard. And Robin Williams, there's no one that can play sorrow like Robin Williams can play sorrow.
The crying clown. It's just the perfect.
Like, this is weird, but, you know, for me, this is definitely one of those movies that I hold dear, like I said before, but another one that I hold really dear off topic is Jumanji. There are times.
Oh my God. Can we watch that?
Absolutely. There are times in that movie where he makes me cry just by like how real his,
gosh,
his intention is. It gets me. Like, he's just one of those actors. It's hard to talk about because it just gets you.
What is that? Is it because he's so funny? But he can just, with a couple words, make me lose my shit. Like, it's just like...
But that's the thing. When you're the funniest, like, when you're an extremely comedically talented actor, you're also most likely to be one of the best dramatic actors as well. It's like, look at Jim Carrey. You get somebody who can be every and any character ever, and yet that means they can be any and every character ever. It's like they can take it to 100 and be Dumb and Dumber. And they can take it down a notch and do the Truman Show. Like,
oh my God, the Truman Show.
Yeah. It's just, and to me, I just kind of threw Jim Carrey out there. But like, Jim Carrey and Robin Williams were like my 90s comedy idols as a kid. I mean, this is a girl who literally, while we had company over, I bent over at a party at 4 years old. I bent over and talked out of my butt like Jim Carrey because I just was like, that's funny, right? Jim Carrey did it.
Oh, my God.
No bueno.
So, give me that B.O.B.
Okay, girl. So, last time, Ashley was kind enough to read us the incredible B.O.B. of Mommy Dearest.
All in one take.
I know. It was just a wild description. But I'm here to read the B.O.B. for Mrs. Doubtfire. So get ready, folks, because here it comes. She makes dinner. She does windows. She reads bedtime stories. She's a blessing in disguise. How far would an ordinary father go to spend more time with his children? Daniel Hillard, Robin Williams, is no ordinary father. So when he learns his ex-wife, Sally Field, needs a housekeeper, he applies for the job. With a perfect wig, a little makeup, and a dress for all occasions, he becomes Mrs. Doubtfire, a devoted British housekeeper who is hired on the spot. Free to be the woman he never knew he could be, the disguised Daniel creates a whole new life with his entire family. Outrageous, hilarious, and often touching, Robin Williams makes this box office hit a film to be watched again and again. Rated PG, I believe.
Really?
It says PG on here, but I think, wouldn't it be PG-13?
I was going to say, there's a lot of, like, sexual innuendo jokes, which you would expect from Robin Williams improv.
Well, fun fact, they had so many versions of this movie that they had a PG version, a PG-13 version, an R version, and an NC-17 version. Yeah!
What's the NC-17 version?
Don't even know. I have no idea what it would be like.
What version did I watch?
Whatever is the theatrical cut that we all have seen.
Oh, my God.
Just a PG version, I guess. No, they had so much improv with Robin that, they had all these versions.
Oh, my God, that's so awesome.
Which, this is also a super, side note, somewhat related.
That was a great POV, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This reminds me of what I've heard about the making of Ferris Bueller. There were different versions of Ferris Bueller.
Oh, yeah.
And it kind of, went in so many directions. Like, he was sort of, an asshole in it. And, he got up to, all kinds of bad things. And, I think they did what they did with this movie there, where they just simplified. They just kept it real, kept it, kind of, not necessarily short and sweet, but just simplified down to the point. And it actually made for not only a more wholesome movie, but for a more iconic, classic movie that has been the hit that it's been.
Oh, yeah. Ferris Bueller, that movie was made in the editing room. Because in the way Matthew Broderick was playing the character was to be a pompous asshole.
Yeah.
But,
and it's funny because you kind of get that. But then in the movie, the cut we've seen, he never actually does anything to where you're like.
No, because we get all the charming parts.
We get all the charming parts. Yeah, that's totally the
thing. So we get all the PG Robin in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
No, there are some total innuendos.
Oh,
there's the
dinner scene?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
I didn't get that as a kid.
There's just so many. When he sees Stu, a.k.a. Pierce Brosnan, when he gets out of the pool, I remember he looks at me and says, by the look of you, you look rather cold.
Yeah.
Just all these little jabs. The jab game is on.
Stay tuned to the drinking game
at
the end of the episode.
One of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So essentially, we open on Robin Williams doing some voiceover work. There's actually been a couple of sort of questions about that because this movie does not take place in Hollywood.
No.
It takes place in San Francisco. Yet show business is a reoccurring thing in this movie, as we'll discuss. But it's interesting because he's doing a voiceover to an already animated cartoon. Mm-hmm. And I think generally, I have not done professional voiceover work, especially for animated stuff. And I think generally you would do the voiceover and they'd sort of animate to that.
It kind of goes both ways.
Yeah.
Maybe back in the day when.
I think it does go both ways because I feel based on stuff my brothers told me too.
Yeah.
And it depends too on if it's, initial recording or if it's ADR filler, recaptioning. Some people theorize that he was voicing, he was actually not the original person who voiced that cartoon, but that they had brought him in to redo someone else's voice.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, is also why the producer says something to him this is costing us thousands of dollars to get in here and do this today. Because it wasn't the original plan, essentially. So
I think when you're watching this movie, you gotta extend your belief a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Like, Robin Williams, an actor living in San Francisco. Yeah, probably not. Like,
yeah,
an artist in San Francisco.
It's hard to say.
He puts on the makeup inside a bathroom. Like, that shit took hours.
No,
like,
yeah. It's like, yeah. That stuff, you have to just, again, go with the flow. Because those things are just not going to be accurate. I mean, yes, there is some work to be had in San Francisco. It's just that I think they try to portray it more like how the industry can be down in L.A., or New York versus, like, specifically San Francisco. But this movie very, like, honorably is in San Francisco. Like, it's something that makes it iconic.
Yeah,
so
yeah, for sure.
I think they just wanted to kind of keep to that.
Well, yeah, because Robin Williams lived there, obviously. Yeah. And he kind of, like, kept on talking it up.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like, well, is there really that much work to be had up there? But honestly, like, especially,
oh, yeah,
you know, nowadays and even then... For sure.
Oh no, there's studios. I mean, in every single city, you could get work anywhere. I just think maybe Robin Williams gets fired because he doesn't want to record a voice for a cartoon that's smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
Maybe since, like, you know, it's hard to get a job as a working actor in a city that is in LA. You kind of like just roll with the punches.
Yeah, sort of taking what you can get a little bit.
Yeah.
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 But, you know, that's how it is regardless of where you are in that industry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You gotta kiss some ass sometime.
Yeah. But what I like is that in the opening scene, Robin is not there to kiss asses.
No.
He is doing his job and in the middle of it starts kind of ragging on it because this cartoon is showing a bird enjoying a cigarette in the cartoon, which he just... He morally opposes that.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of an immediate sort of save the cat moment where we immediately know from him he has a moral standing and this guy is going to be a good father. Like, we know that immediately.
Yeah.
He cares very much about children.
Oh, yeah.
And their well-being. And then after that, he leaves, picks up the kids from school, is very excited that his son, played by Matthew Lawrence... the middle Lawrence brother, who I always thought was, like, the cute one.
Yeah.
I mean, Joey was supposed to be, like, the one they always promoted as cute, but I was like...
He's too commercial.
He was hammy.
Yeah.
They hammed him up big time.
Yeah.
They like...
A lot of pork.
Totally. Totally. But Matthew Lawrence, Boy Meets World time.
Yes.
I mean, adorbs. His son Chris is turning 12 that day. It's his birthday. And
I like how his kids were just like, did you get fired again? Why are you picking us up?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that just goes to show you how in-tuned kids are to, like, adult situations, even though they don't understand all the nuances of it.
Yes.
They know, like, okay, this is going to make mom mad.
Mm-hmm.
You want to have a party. They're already on it. And it's
He says, I want to throw a party. And he's like, it's okay. Mom won't be home for 4 hours. I'm sorry, Robin. I'm sorry, Daniel Hillard. But you cannot throw a party, then clean up after the party within 4 hours.
No.
I don't care if you're doing it for children. I don't care if you're doing it for, like,
For those who don't know Salem in real life. She
little old
throws
me.
The best parties. And I'm sorry, Salem, you're great at hosting parties. I mean, iconic Halloween parties.
You said kids are actually so much more in tune with what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was immediately true with the oldest daughter, which would be more normal for the older one to really be more understanding. Lydia, because he says, you know, I want to have this party. And she immediately is like, no. Like, don't do that. I knew then, like, that's the one that's going to – she's not surprised by anything that's about to happen in the movie.
Yeah.
She's very well aware. The little one, of course, isn't at all. And the younger one, he's not, like, so much younger that he wouldn't get it. But I think he just is a little more oblivious compared to her.
Well, let's go back to Miranda Hillard. Miranda Hillard is a very successful interior designer.
Mm-hmm.
And her name is on the building. Did you notice?
Oh, she was like...
She's a boss-ass bitch.
She's totally... I think as a kid, I just thought, oh, she's like an interior... She like does houses. No. They were asking her about, like, oh, this hotel called and this inn and, like, you know, wherever called. It's like, these are big, big deals. Like, she's a boss-ass bitch. Like, she's like... probably more successful than any Doris Day character ever played, which is saying something.
Damn.
Boom.
Shots fired.
Rest in peace, Doris Day. I just, like, made a total jab, and you just are, like, you just passed away. Anyway.
But, I mean, it makes sense, because that house, a corner house in freaking San Francisco.
That house.
Money. Yeah, Robin is not paying for that house. No. He's not paying for the toilet paper in that house.
And that alone is something that, especially after 14 years, that's going to be the driving wedge at the end of the day. Whether you love someone or you don't, like, people have to deliver, you know? Mm-hmm. If someone's not motivated to do anything, let alone if they make a lot or a little, it just becomes unattractive to people, especially when that person's working harder.
Mm-hmm.
It just becomes such a headache. You're like, I feel like I can't rely on you for anything.
Yeah. And that really comes to head when she comes home to the animal house.
Totally. Yeah. Like literally a petting zoo, like a mobile petting zoo was called to have this party. And then
what did she say? Like, you to the goat that's eating her flowers?
She's like, you ate my begonia. In such a, like, Sally Field way.
Yeah.
Like, I adore her so much.
She plays, like, such a good pissed off mom.
Yeah.
Like.
But I like that, like, when they cast her, they said, and this is perfect, they said, we really wanted her to still be likable.
Yeah.
Which, you like me. You really like me, you know? So that's perfect because, you know, she could have been, I think if you cast her as someone a little more stern.
Yeah.
You just would hate her. You wouldn't feel for her. You'd say, lighten up, lady. Yeah. Like, you just
How can you hate Mama Gump? Like, she's... she's great.
Oh.
Has that woman ever played anything other than, like, a
precious
mom?
Precious Mothers? I don't know.
Well, and Lincoln. Well, I guess she was a mother.
Precious,
too.
Precious Mothers. Some people are born to be Precious Mothers. That was the last episode.
Except
that
Joan Crawford.
Mother's Day. Yeah.
Sally Field, take a back seat. This is Robin's
back
time.
Seat.
This
you is had your holiday. God.
Mr. So, Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah. So while this party's being thrown, Miranda is at her awesome ass office where she's just kicking designer ass all day. And her boss, played by Martin Mull, by the way, who is in Sabrina the Teenage Witch, Jingle All the Way. I mean, yeah, I love Martin Mull. Comes in, lets her know, hey, your old friend from way back when called, and he really wants to hire you for this. So what we know are a couple things. Anyone who wants to hire her has money, first off. Second of all, old friend, when he says your old friend called, Sally's reaction or Miranda's reaction, she's like she's
so
immediately
flustered.
Yeah. Like she's all like, she's like very excited about it. And it's like, okay, old friend means old fling, old somebody that she had feelings for. And he's seeking her out.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Mull specifically says he wanted you to help him with this. So those are three things that are very, very exciting. They're at play in the plot here. And then right after that, she heads home for the party and shit's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So she storms this through the house looking for her husband.
By the way, the music's pumping.
Yeah. There's kids hanging, literally hanging from the chandeliers.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's...
They're wild.
Yeah.
It's wild.
It's a crazy party.
I would lose my shit.
I would, too.
Yeah.
Where was my invite?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number one. That's the number one. Why didn't I get the invitation?
Yeah. And Robin Williams is dancing on top of a table with his kids. And I love how, like, the kids see the mom first. And they're just like,
yeah, they know.
Shit, this is going to suck.
Yeah.
And Matthew Lawrence, I just, like, the kid that plays Chris Hillard.
Mm-hmm.
His performance in that scene is so good. He's,
it
like,
really
the
is.
Callous in all of this. Like, you really look to him to, like...
And I think he's that cliche kid that sort of blames themselves.
Yeah.
Or blames himself for their divorce.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, talk about worst birthday ever. Your parents decide to get a divorce. Like,
be 12. Fuck.
Remember your 12th birthday when me and mom broke up?
But there were animals.
That was
a good memory.
Remember the goats? That was fun.
Oh, God. Oh,
but
that was wild.
Yeah, they decide then and there it's not going to work. This is where I get mad at Sally Field, though.
then, you know, after the party, we have the scene where they break up, essentially, and she's mm-hmm. just fed up. She's blaming him. You get to have all the fun with the kids. I'm forced to be the only one who works
yeah.
and works really hard.
Yeah.
And I never have time with them. And I never, when I do, it's like I'm cleaning up their messes and I'm never the fun
yeah,
one.
Yeah, you're the one that has to discipline and yeah. get her kids to do homework and
yeah.
cook and clean. And
she's like, I'm always the monster and the bad guy and I never get to be the fun, exciting, spontaneous parent ever. Mm. That's just never something I get to be seen as.
Robin is like, she's like, we're done. This is it. And he's like, no, like, we'll go on vacation. We'll go to couples therapy. And she's like, no, that's not going to work anymore.
Yeah, she and literally just shuts it down. She yeah. almost shuts it down kind of casually at first, which I think they were, there must have been a, like something directionally, they didn't yeah. want the tone to be too real there.
Is that because she got like a message from her old college flame earlier that
yeah.
day? She's just a jealous bitch that couldn't stand that her kids loved Robin Williams better.
Well, that's a huge part of it. You're not wrong at all. That's
yeah.
a huge part of it.
And
may
I know, she could have just rolled with the punches a little better, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. No, she could. Essentially, her thing is like she comes off that way, and I think that's how a kid, especially like as a kid I
oh,
saw
yeah.
that. I was like, oh, she's just can't lighten up. You know,
yeah.
Robin Williams just wants to be fun, and she doesn't like fun. As an adult, I'm like, I totally get this. Not just because she takes things seriously, she wants things to be more organized and better, but because at the end of the day, he is a great dad, but he's not the best husband. Because mm-hmm. when you put the kids first, then you're not putting the marriage first. And
wow.
If there's no family.
Wow.
If there's no marriage that binds it.
All I'm saying is,
wow. It's a thing.
Truth.
And then it gets heartbreaking when he says, but come on, Miranda, we still love each other.
I know.
And her face is like, she does not love him still.
Yeah.
And, oh my God. His reaction to that. That's the first like, oh, God, Robin Williams, you are going to make me cry today, scene.
Yeah, oh,
like,
my God, yeah.
Oh, my God, that man.
I don't remember that scene when I was a kid,
mm-hmm.
but now that, like, I've been in relationships, I've mm-hmm. been in love, and hearing that, and just,
and you've
like,
had breakups.
Yeah,
you
and
know?
Just, like, falling out of love with someone, I mean, it's never, it's
just so, so sad.
Yeah.
It's so, so sad. It's literally heartbreaking. After the split, Daniel heads to his brother's house.
Mm-hmm.
And his brother, Frank, is incredible.
Oh, my God. Uncle Frank and Aunt Jack.
Uncle Frank and Aunt Jack are
so
the fucking
good.
Greatest. I love any scene with them, first of all.
Yes.
Because they're just endearing people. They're funny. They take care of him. And they help him in the hardest time ever do this kind of impossible task
mm-hmm.
that otherwise wouldn't have happened without them.
Yeah.
And I also just generally, like, adore, and I'm not trying to get, like, you know, political or anything like that. I just really love that even then they really normalized a gay couple in, like, and not addressing that, oh, they're gay. And
yeah.
that's the plot of the movie. It's like, can we just have people be people, you know? And
yeah,
as absolutely. A kid, I loved that because I have gay relatives. And I always felt that was normal and grew up very, you know, totally cool with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I obviously learned later that some people did not find that normal and did not find that cool. And I liked that in this movie, they took the opportunity to just be like, yeah, no, that's part of it. Not a big deal. Never an issue. Just is what it is. And I just totally respected that even then.
Oh, he's, yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
Not only are we introduced to them and what their position mm-hmm. is as makeup artists.
Oh, yeah.
Extravaganza.
I just want to be their friends. Like,
I know.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I wrote. I just want to hang out with them all day forever and play dress up.
Yeah.
And like just
yeah.
see how many, all the possibilities.
And just like shit talk about people.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
yeah. I just love it. I love them. What just makes that scene great is like we're aware who they are and what their talents are that will definitely be utilized later.
So the actor who plays, Frank,
mm-hmm.
he wrote Kinky Boots. I mean, he's a fabulous,
oh, yeah.
I mean, Tony Award winning actor.
Oh yeah.
I remember a couple years ago they did Hairspray Live
mm-hmm.
on TV. Well, he played, Edna Turnbag.
Yeah. He's very successful. So good. He's incredible. In fact, Robin Williams was known for doing an impression of him on Comic Relief. Mm-hmm. And when he found out that Robin was in this movie and he had a gay brother, there was a roll up for that. He came to him and said, "Robin, I want to play your gay brother."
Yes.
And it was just like, all right, perfect. You know, it was just kind of something that fell right into place just because it couldn't be more great than that. It's just too good.
No, he's amazing.
Yeah.
He's so, so good.
Oh, man.
And
Uncle
he's
Frank
also
Anakin.
The voice of Yao in Mulan, the little tough
yeah.
guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Ancestors bleed. Yeah. Like that. Or whatever he says.
That raspy voice.
Yes. Oh, I love the sound of his voice. He's so, so good.
I know. Just one of a kind. So, essentially, it's clear that Daniel doesn't think that this divorce is really going to go through.
Oh, I know.
And then cut to a court scene where it's going through and divorce is happening. And the judge says, "Daniel, you essentially have 3 months to get your life together. You need to get a job, keep it, and you need to have a stable home that's good for a family environment." Like, all on his own. A guy who just quit a job the other day. Like,
yeah. So first of all, to find an apartment in San Francisco.
Seriously.
That's a miracle in itself.
Yeah.
And
oh my God.
Finding a job, I don't know. I think this is another shitty thing about divorce. I feel like everyone gets so selfish and they want what's theirs.
Yeah.
And I think there needs to be more give, because I think if you give more, you'll get back more. And
well,
that was really insightful.
And that's interesting that you say that. No, really, because that's usually was the downfall to a marriage, is there isn't give and take.
Yeah.
So if you haven't been giving enough already, then that's probably where you're already at. So it's not expected for you to probably give anything at that point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just so sad.
It is really sad.
He packs up his things and heads out. He meets with Mrs. Sellner, who is the caseworker for him.
Yeah. Who is also Jim Carrey's assistant in Liar Liar.
Yes. Oh, my God. I was like, this is a character actress I've seen like a handful of times. Yes. She's great. And she's awesome. She's very stoic and like serious face. Just
God, that scene with her and Robin Williams when she's like, "Well, what do you do?"
And he's like, "Oh, yeah, I do voices." And then you have that iconic montage of him just like riffing, just improv, just fantastic silliness for the win. And she's just never laughed. And I love at the end, she's so
I know.
Do you find yourself amusing? And he's just like,
there was a time where I thought myself was funny, but today you've proven me wrong. It's like
so good.
It's so Robin Williams.
I have a general note that I just like to say going forward, that I love his responses like that throughout the movie, because I feel like as an actor, that's just like what Daniel would do. I mean, it's kind of like what Robin Williams in real life would probably already do. But I feel like he played that to a T of like, no matter where I'm at, anytime I'm getting shit, I'm just going to play it how I would play it. Like, he just has these moments.
Which really comes into play the next scene where he goes to his first job and the guy's kind of an asshole. And he's like, "You box him, you ship him."
Yeah.
And so, he thinks he's going to be on camera. Oh, the job is at a local TV station.
Oh, yeah.
He thinks he's going to be on camera.
He's like, "Will I be presenting these films on air?" Yeah. And the guy's like, "No, you're in shipping. Sorry."
Yeah.
Like, and it's that perspective of his that is a little unrealistic, but that a lot of actors do maintain. Like, even when he's in court, like, he says to the judge, when the judge, like, kind of says, you know, "Your visitation rights are, like, one day a week," he says to the attorney, like, "Can't you say something like I object or whatever?" Like, he's thinking, like, in his mind, like a movie. Like, life is like a movie. Like, can't you do that thing that I see?
Yeah.
And you have to just remember that going forward in the movie, because there's a lot of moments like that where he doesn't have the greatest grasp on reality sometimes.
No. Well, then we get Miranda back in her office, which has a view of the Golden Gate Bridge. She's doing fine. She could have afforded a marriage counselor, is all I'm saying. That's it.
So
I'm moving on.
So true. Oh, yeah.
But she's there with Stu, and they're going over design patterns, and she's trying to be professional.
Just so you know, in case we hadn't said it, Stu is played by Pierce Brosnan.
James Bond.
James Bond at the time.
Oh, remember throwback to Darby O'Gill?
Oh.
Another James Bond
in the Salem and Binks Present Club. I love it.
And Miranda's trying to stay professional, but we can obviously, she's being very flustered by Stu asking her to dinner. And
it's such a flirty scene because, like, with each line, it's the back and forth. So she would say something like, I want to go with an Italian curtain. And he's like, I'd like to reconnect with you and keep our friendship going. She's like, I was thinking of... What about the eggs?
Eggshell or the...
Yeah, it's like she just...
Or paste.
Like, just cannot pay attention to anything he's clearly trying to put out there, which is, hey, girl, I'm in town. I'm ready.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I think Miss Doubtfire says it perfectly later. Let your sheets cool down before you invite another one into your bed. It's like...
There's just some great innuendo that he gives Miranda. And obviously, we know it's her ex-husband saying that to her, so that's what would happen. But, like, she doesn't. And she just kind of, like, sort of brushes it off, like, the weirdness of it and goes, okay. And then, like, continues to, like, be herself. Oh,
that odd English humor.
Yeah, exactly. It's like it doesn't fully hit. Yeah, you know, it's like so dry. Mix. Yeah. There's a romance beginning to kindle a little bit between the two of them. And which is very cute, but it's interesting because originally in one of the first drafts of the script, they wanted to have Stu be this like super evil villain. Like they were planning to have him be like an asshole.
But then it would have been a completely different movie.
Yeah. Then. And it would have also brought out the bad side of Mrs. Doubtfire. Like it'd be like some kind of revenge or like it would have been like a duel between the two of them, which is just not, you know, it's not like a winning back of anything. It's like we're talking about him just wanting to be with his kids.
Yeah.
And so it just would become a different movie.
Yeah.
So instead they were just like, what if we did the complete opposite and made him perfect?
Yeah.
What if we made him like too good to be true, but is true?
Well, I think, I mean, that's a lot of times you hear about like people, like their step parents and like, you know, I think in movies, they're often portrayed as, like, these evil people.
Yeah.
But they're just, you know, they're just people. Who, you know? And it just, I really like how, because they could have so easily made Pierce Brosnan into, like, this total dick. I mean, he has the accent for it.
Right? Like, they could have so many times.
Yeah.
Like, the scene where they're at, is it a country club? Oh, they're all at the pool.
The private pool?
Yeah, the private fancy pool. And he's standing there, Pierce Brosnan is standing there with a friend of his, and they're talking about Miranda and her family. And it could have been, like, it could have been frat boy. Like, it could have been like, oh, I can't wait to get in on this chick, you know? Like, she's got kids, but whatever. You know, it could have been some really, like, shit trash talk. And instead it was, like, him saying, oh, I'm really in love with this one, and I know I never said I wanted kids, but I am in love with these kids. Yeah, I adore them.
I'm crazy about them.
Like, can you imagine? Like,
I think as a ex-husband, that's what you would want. You would want someone who loves your kids, too.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want someone who's going to be a dick to your kids.
Oh, of course. But at the same time, as Robin Williams, Daniel, is listening in on that, he also is kind of like super jealous because he's like, well, I don't want you to fall in love with my kids. I want my kids to make sure they're always in love with me. Like I'm the dad, you know? So there's,
There's a lot of growing to happen in this movie.
So
for sure.
Much.
And I think towards the end, Robin Williams, accepts that, you know?
And there's a couple of moments, we'll get to them, where you can see it in his face that he's realizing that this isn't something that's going to turn around and go back to the way it was.
No.
This is a permanent thing, and things are kind of, like, the mom is better without him a little bit.
But before we get there, there's a lot of bitterness to happen.
Yes.
Like the first dinner at the apartment.
Oh, my God. Okay. Dude, that breaks my heart. That scene is a great, tough scene.
Yeah. Well, first of all, he's serving his kids. I mean, he just moved in. There's boxes everywhere.
Yeah.
It's filthy. And he's feeding his kids Chinese food. And
to be honest, it could be way worse. But it's definitely not the fabulous home that Miranda lives in.
And it's, you know, it's different. It's not what, you know, they're used to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Chris says, you know, it's my fault. It's yeah. And it's something. And then
you see a lot of very telling moments in that scene. He blames himself.
And then little Natalie says, you know, can't you just tell mommy you're sorry? And it's just like, you know, kids trying. I think they just captured so well, you know, what kids think. It's they blame themselves. Mm-hmm. They can't really understand, like, why can't you just say sorry?
Why can't you just get along?
And then Lydia is just so angry about it. And I think it's just all these emotions coming together.
They hit it perfectly, writing-wise. Just going, okay, what are the first initial shit stages of divorce? Let's throw it all in one scene.
Oh, I think the writing is so good, which is so shocking because the studio fired the writer at the end of this movie.
Yeah.
Because they wanted a happy ending. And it's like, it's outrageous because this is one of the most iconic movies. And that scene is just so beautiful.
And they really... They got down how this affects children. Then it got into the selfishness that happens between parents, like you were saying about, you know, no give and take.
Oh, yeah, when Sally Field burst in.
Yeah, and he said you dropped them off an hour late, and then you're picking them up an hour early. That's not fair. And then, you know, just his reaction saying, like, you guys are on my time. Like you don't want to hear your parent speak like that. Yeah. Your parent does not want to speak to you like that. It's just that... going through something like this makes a parent so vulnerable that and their kids have to see that, and that sucks that they end up kind of having to have that experience with them. But that's the reality of it. And then, of course, the ragging on the other parent.
Oh, yeah. Like, she, you know, she's saying, I love what you did with the place. And
I
love what Robin Williams says. He's like, I was going for a refugee motif.
Yeah, like fleeing my homeland motif. Oh, and then he makes fun of. She's wearing a sweater that's like very
patchwork.
Yeah, what is that? I don't know. It was 90s. God, they got into that shit, and he totally ragged on. He goes, "I love your Dances with Wolves motif," which he would have all these references just at the top of his head because that's how he was.
Yeah,
that they had to have a producer essentially do like what a scripty would do just for the references. Like, keeping continuity of them so that they could see whatever we use, we have to make sure we get the rights to you.
Yeah.
Like, they had to get the rights to have that joke
in there. Put a lot of people to work on this one. Yes. A lot of people were employed in 93 thanks to Robin Williams.
Thank you, Robin Williams.
And then there's that part where she says, I'm going to be taking my children. And he goes, our children. Yeah. And it's like, it's so, so good.
I know. It's rough. But that's kind of like a little inciting incident in that scene is that she says, I'm putting out an ad for a housekeeper. And he kind of sneaks away and looks at the ad and changes the number on it so that it'll be the wrong number in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. So nobody will actually call her for it. So only he can call her for that job that he's aware of.
And the next montage is incredible.
Just him doing what he does. Voices.
What was your favorite one, like, of voices?
Oh, man. I think I love the one that's like, get back in your sail. And then, hello. She hangs up. She's like, oh, fuck this shit. Hangs up immediately.
I love the, because you cannot put this in a movie today. She goes, well, I don't work with the males because I used to be one.
Yeah. Used to be one.
It's super like, weird. It's like, I'll get back to you. It's like.
I know. And she was so put off. Like, ugh. And it's like.
You can't put like.
You can't really make that joke now.
No. Yeah. Absolutely not.
It was good though.
No. It was. But today it would have been like. Yeah. It would just.
Yeah. It wouldn't have worked.
No. No.
Yeah, we were lucky to get a normalized gay couple in this movie, you know, so I guess, unfortunately, we couldn't expect
No, yeah. Transphobia is still there, but homophobia, no, we're good.
We're getting better on that one in the 90s. Yeah, God.
And then finally, Mrs. Doubtfire calls.
Makes her first vocal appearance. My God.
And she's just as pleasant as ever. And I didn't really pick up on this, how he comes up with the name Doubtfire.
Oh, yeah. He reads a newspaper that's just sitting there and it says, like, police doubt fire was, you know, caused by whatever. And it's just like, he just sees that, which, random side note, of course, since we're full of facts today.
Fun fact.
This is based on a book. It's based, of course. And the book is called Alias Madam Doubtfire. And it's just basically got the same log line. I think so many other things are different, but essentially it's ex-husband wants to spend time with his children, so he dresses up as a woman to be the housekeeper. The ex-wife has no idea, but the children all know. And so they're all in on it, unlike in the movie where nobody knows. Two kids find out later. The littlest one never knows, and it's all revealed in the end. In that book, that was really essentially the plot. But she came up with that name because there was a shop, like a jewelry shop, and the jeweler, the owner of the shop, was known as Madame Doubtfire for whatever reason. And she said she never actually went in and, like, talked to her or anything.
Really?
But just, like, was fascinated by this general idea and then, like, put this forward. Oh. Which I just think is so cool. I don't know. Cool. It's interesting. So that's, you know, that's how it came. Was discovered in real life. And then in the movie, it was just like, what the fuck do I call myself?
Oh, I gave you a name, didn't I?
Yeah, like, I love that. So good. Apparently, Robin Williams did a show with Andy Kaufman at Carnegie Hall.
No way.
And played like his supposed grandmother. The way he played that grandmother was like inspiration for how he'd later play Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yes. Yeah.
Can you imagine like with Andy fucking Kaufman? What the fuck? He took a little bit of inspiration, too, from Margaret Thatcher and Julia Child.
I see that. Yeah. I see that.
Isn't that funny? I love that it's not just like Elizabeth Doubtfire. It's like Euphigenia Doubtfire. It's like just completely off the charts. Name we haven't heard from in a while.
Yes.
Like super traditional.
The makeover scene is so iconic. So funny. Robin Williams, Daniel, goes to his brother's house and he asks his brother at the door, can you make me a woman? And he hugs him. He's like, I've been waiting my whole life for you to ask me that.
Oh, honey.
Yes.
Like, so happy.
Oh, God.
Oh, and then it's just such a great sequence. You know,
you would understand. It's just like,
They get all a lot of different costumes on and different voices.
Yes.
You have a Barbara Streisand impression at a certain point.
Something we have to like quote when we're getting ready for my wedding, which is coming up.
Yeah.
Is Uncle Jack says, okay, everyone, let's pray.
And yes.
He goes into like start making the makeup. It's like, I could totally relate. It's
so good.
Yeah.
I love when they sing Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh my God.
Well, because I think, what's his name? Played Uncle Frank was
yes, he was
Fiddler on the Roof.
Yes,
yes, yeah. So it was just like perfect. Oh my God, it was so cute.
It was hilarious. And then he plays Barbara Streisand. He does a really good Barbara.
He was a great Barbara and looked like her, if I may say so. It was good. It was on point.
And then when Miss Doubtfire comes through, oh my gosh,
they play Luck Be a Lady by
Uncle
Frank,
Frank
and Aunt Jack.
Uncle Frank and Aunt Jack, they do this handshake. Do you remember that?
Yes!
It was
Parent Trap level pressure.
It was so natural. It was, I want to learn that, and we're going to do that. You want to do that?
We're doing it.
Let's learn it.
The Salem and Binks handshake
will be
the Uncle Frank and Aunt Jack handshake.
And if anyone ever, like, questions us about it in public, we're going to, like,
assume that you have heard this episode.
Yeah.
If you've heard this episode, then you're a true fan.
Yes.
Which we love.
God. Okay, guys. Audience, I challenge you. What a good Halloween costume is Mrs. Doubtfire with the cream on her face.
Yes.
not everyone will get it, but all the cool people will get it.
If you really wanted to be extra, you could do a group costume where everyone is a different thing that he dresses up as. So one person could be like the Jewish lady.
Yes.
One person could be the Barbara. One person can be the like Cuban lady. One person can be Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yes.
Another person could be Mrs. Doubtfire with the frosting.
Yes. Okay. Done.
I mean,
done.
Am I?
Who's
a genius?
Gonna do it? Who's gonna do it?
So when we first see Daniel as Mrs. Doubtfire, when essentially we first see Mrs. Doubtfire, he arrives at their house, Miranda's house now, and it's this glorious little opening shot with the music hitting
the music
just right.
So nice.
And it's like, it's the introduction of this woman.
Yeah.
And she comes in. Nobody obviously recognizes that it's him. They just assume this is some older British woman.
Can I say, like, hats off to the director, hats off to Robin Williams for playing Mrs. Doubtfire straight. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, yeah.
Not making it like, oh, it's a man in drag. Like, it's a sweet old woman. They could have easily made this into, like, an, you know,
super
some
silly
guy.
Yeah. Yeah. But,
I mean,
it had to be believable so he could get the job.
I mean,
to be
Tim
this.
Allen was up for the role first.
Yeah.
It would have been a completely different movie.
Okay. Tim Allen was apparently supposed to play him or Stu. Which doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Maybe I shouldn't be shaking my head on a podcast, but
but that's what Ashley's doing right
I'm
now.
I'm shaking my head.
I actually don't mind Tim Allen because I'm such a fan of the Santa Claus. And I know that was his prime, was like the early 90s Home Improvement. Like, I grew
up
on Home Improvement.
But it's like goofy.
But yeah, his whole thing is sarcasm.
Yeah.
I just didn't feel like he had that lovability that, like, Robin Williams brought to Daniel.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, he's obviously a great dad, as he was in Home Improvement. But his approach is not the... I love you directly, unconditionally.
No, it's like a tough love kind of thing.
It's a Midwestern man up kind of thing that he does. It's a very different, American thing.
He needs the right amount of Tom Hanks sprinkled in there.
Yes! Oh my God!
What was Tom Hanks doing in 93?
He was probably just like Forrest Gumping, running around as Forrest Gump forever.
Really?
Everybody was probably just like, what is the line? Keep running, Forrest?
Run, Forrest, run. What, do you record a movie podcast? Jesus Christ. Oh, yeah, he was recording Forrest Gump. Oh, yeah. So Sally Field went from role to Forrest Gump. Wow, she had a busy...
I'm just going to say this out there.
Okay.
We talked a long time ago about movies we weren't super in love with.
Mm-hmm.
I don't hate by any means, but I'm just...
I will walk out here right now.
I'm not in love with Forrest Gump. I can enjoy it. If it's on, I'll be like, all right, whatever. And there's things, especially film aspects about it that I love, but I just don't get why people are obsessed with it.
Yeah.
I just never...
It's a white person thing, I guess.
It's a very... I will say it is. It's one of the most white folk movies I've ever...
Well, this has been fun. goodbye.
Goodbye forever. It's not bad. There's things about it I enjoy. There's some great performances. There's some really cool, just, you know, that early film trickery where they kind of, not Photoshop, but essentially digitally insert him into historical footage. But, you know, newsflash, that shit was done in 1941 with Citizen Kane.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's an American classic. It's... You know,
it is.
People have
is.
Their opinions, no matter how wrong they are. And
coming from Miss I Hate Breakfast Club.
I hate Breakfast Club.
See, I'm just fascinated. I'm fascinated what people like and don't like. But I don't mind at all. You know, I love Breakfast Club, but I'm not like, oh, you better like it. Like, I don't care. I just.
It's worst movie ever.
That's okay. And again, don't hate Forrest Gump. I just never got... Maybe it's one of those ones you have to really grow up with and watch a lot growing up.
You know, you never know what you're going to get, so...
Just like the movie. I think he says that, right?
No.
Ashley's going to throw me out of here. She's going to throw me off my own balcony.
I would flip this table, but it's mahogany.
Oh. Anyway. The only reason I started laughing is because Sally Field, as an old... woman, and the way they wanted her to be in that movie was, I'm sorry, it was so laughable to me. Like, how she just was. Like, the makeup, plus, like, the shriekiness, plus, like, just, it was just a fucking, she was like a human cartoon in that movie to me.
Yeah, I mean, it just won the Academy Award for Best Picture.
That's okay. Ben Affleck has an Academy Award. They don't mean anything. It's okay. They don't mean anything. No, I'm kidding.
So, Mrs. Doubtfire comes in for his audition with the Hillards.
Or interview.
Interview.
But he's an actor.
Yeah.
May as well be the same thing.
We're theater folk.
Yeah.
And it's really weird. Meredith has, like, the kids line up to, like, meet her.
I know.
Lydia, you almost think, like, she's trying to, like, catch on to, like, and Chris is like, you're really big for a woman.
Yeah. Very polite.
It's like, are you a linebacker?
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
But it's cute because, like, with Natalie, little baby Mara Wilson, and with Chris, she has these kind of, like, little common interests with them. And then you get to Lydia, and Lydia's just like, I call bullshit. We don't need this lady in here. I want our dad to come babysit us.
Yeah.
And it's just like, whoa, getting to the point. Miranda's just like, oh my God, like my kid's giving me grief right now. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. And, you know, of all people, Mrs. Doubtfire totally calms down the situation and reminds yeah. everybody to relax and that it's inappropriate to argue in front of a guest and to
yeah.
it's inappropriate to bash their father in front of them. And, oh, you know, just, oh,
I love that when yeah. Miranda starts talking shit about, like, Daniel, and she's like, and Mrs. Doubtfire says, I'm sure you would have your kids step out of the room before you verbally bash their father.
Yeah.
And it's just like, girl, like,
I think it's really interesting that right off the bat when we meet Mrs. Doubtfire, it's clear that she runs and she says, I run a tight ship. And it's literally the total opposite of Daniel.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think he just thought, you know, if I can't see my kids, how can I not be me so that I can see my kids?
Yeah.
Like, if what I am is, you know, this, like, person who doesn't run a tight ship, this person who doesn't have a lot of responsibilities and doesn't take care of things, if I try to just play this character completely the opposite, like, he could have dressed up, gotten the part, and then just been like, hey, kids, let's have fun.
Yeah.
But when he picks them up from school later on, we'll see, it is a tight ship. He's yeah. running things completely differently. He's trying to, like, almost prove to himself that he
yeah,
can do
no,
it.
Yeah, no, it's really, he's seeking redemption here, mm-hmm. you know, because he hasn't, like you said earlier, he hasn't been, you know, he's been a cool father, but has he really been the best father? He hasn't been super responsible.
They sit down, like Miranda and Mrs. Doubtfire very quickly, mm-hmm. like she kind of falls for her. She's kind of like, she says, like, I feel like I've known you for so long.
Yeah.
Which is weird because you're kind of like, is she sort of catching on?
Yeah.
But she doesn't. She just goes, wow, you know, I think this is meant to be. This is going to, mm-hmm. I would love for you to come work for us.
Mrs. Doubtfire is coming home from her first day on public transportation.
In heels.
In heels. Oh, Robin says that great line.
Like, I'm going to kill the man who ever made heels.
Yeah, it's just like, amen, sister.
Mm-hmm.
And then who's at the door is Miss Selner, and she's there to check up on the apartment. And
so she's like, let me in, essentially.
Yeah, so she's so pushy.
Yeah, but keep in mind, she doesn't see him as Daniel. She sees him as Mrs. Doubtfire. So mm-hmm. he kind of jokingly is like, I'm his sister, and is just like, and once she says that, she's like, oh, good, then you can take me up to the apartment. It's like, oh, fuck. So then he has to, takes her up there, that iconic scene of him for the first time having to, like, be two people at once happens.
The physical comedy in this scene, it's textbook.
It's great. It's great.
It's so good.
And I love that, like, so he changes in and out of the costume because he's, at one moment he's her, you know, entertaining Mrs. Selner, and the other moment he's Daniel because that's who she has an appointment with. It goes back and forth. He says, you know, do you like a cup of tea? She's like, yeah. And then he's like, fuck, now I gotta go change again. So
yeah.
As he's, like, changing, he has these, like, hilarious puns. Oh, it's a hairy situation, but I'll get through it. And it's like when he's looking at his hairy legs.
I'm a new man.
Yeah, it's with, like, a new face.
I have a couple new developments as he's putting on his bra.
Yeah, it's like just these great little quips that work so well.
So good. So he's trying to get dressed again as Mrs. Doubtfire, and his mask falls into the street.
It, like, flings out into the street,
and
so bad.
Yeah, it's just, because, first of all, I'm sorry, Mrs. Doubtfire, why are you putting your mask, like, right by the window seal?
So, I know. I don't, that's a terrible idea.
But that scene, I'm sure you've read this too, took over 50 takes.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't get the mask to fall right. It's like,
you wouldn't think, but then you look at it and you're like, oh, it's like, the way that the mold is like, it would probably fall weird. You want to be able to see, like, the eyes of that face fall down.
Yes.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
That would take a lot. That would take a long time.
Yeah. That was a late night. But when he's running around getting the tea, that I just, like, the physical comedy was so funny.
God. I
and
still,
he just, like,
just crack up when I watch that. I've seen it 100 times
yeah.
and I just can't
it's
stop laughing.
So funny. And he's trying to think, I need a face. I need a face.
And conveniently, there is a cake in the fridge, and he just throws his face into that cake. And so then you have that iconic moment where Miss Selner walks into the kitchen, he sees her, and he says, "Hello!" and it's yes. so good.
Which all that was Robin Williams.
Oh, yeah. That was all just, like, improv and, like, the tea with, like, the sugar, like, just the frosting just yes. falling off his face into the cups of tea. Oh, my God. I still laugh so hard. It's just
so funny.
Brilliant improv. Like, oh, you got your cream and your sugar tea. I've been laughing at that all day. Then we have a really great montage where it's apparent that things are kind of falling more into routine. Mm-hmm. He picks up the kids a lot. He takes care of them. He's making this his new normal. You have the yeah. famous moment where his boobs catch on fire while he's cooking.
Yes. But he's learning how to cook for the first time.
Yeah. So it's kind of like nice because, you know, Mrs. Doubtfire or not, he's putting himself through having to learn so much about mm-hmm. being more responsible, taking care of himself, taking care of these children the, you know, right way, and being more than just a fun dad.
If you don't watch this movie at all, look up Robin Williams or Mrs. Doubtfire vacuuming.
Yes.
That scene, I think I, like, watched that scene, like, 3 times. It was so much fun. So funny. He's just,
oh, my God. He's just having a ball. What, like,
wouldn't you just want to be on set with him?
Oh, and yeah.
Just like,
oh, yeah. That would be, like, actual goals right there. So things are definitely looking up in terms of just the plan is working. You know, this is a perfect midpoint of the movie. Plan is working.
And then Miss Doubtfire comes back to the Hillard's home and mm-hmm. sees who's sitting there?
James fucking Bond.
God damn it.
The best James Bond.
Oh my God. It's
in
just
my,
like,
opinion.
She's like, oh, what a perfect family.
Yeah. Just like, okay. So at this point, Mrs. Doubtfire is getting to know James Bond, aka Pierce Brosnan, aka Stu, as they call him in the movie, short for Stuart. What does she
Doubtfire.
Say? It's more like a thick soup, really.
Yes. Not a name.
Once, like, these two, once Pierce Brosnan's character, Stu, is brought into the picture, it's just game on when it comes to, it's just jab game, man. It's just, like, it's on point. Mrs. Doubtfire does not hold back on her, like, backhanded, very dry British humor, just, like, total insults constantly. And sometimes, like, privately to just him, and then other times it's just, like, these little offhanded ones that are hard to catch.
I mean, old people can get away with that. They can say, like, the rudest fucking thing.
And he knew that, and he played it up and was like, I'm gonna say whatever I want to this freaking guy. Like, he's Mr. Perfect. I don't think so. You know, I'm gonna try to ruin him. I won't be able to, but I'm gonna try, you know. And it just continues. It's so great. I think after that is when it's revealed to the two older children, Chris and Lydia, that this is not a 6-year-old lady looking after them. This is their dad.
Oh, my God. And that scene how he gets found out is...
Yes. It's kind of, like, scary a little bit.
Yeah.
I think, like, Chris walks in on him while he's peeing, and it's just like, whoa, what? You're standing up
Mrs.
and peeing?
Mrs. Doubtfire has a penis?
Yeah. Like... It was very, like, alarming. I think as a kid, it's just like, what? You know, it's very, very confusing.
Yeah.
And he just runs in, tells his sister, essentially, it's just revealed. He comes in and tells them, you know, it's me, and they figure it all out. But they really make sure we're not going to tell your mother, of course. This is the only way I get to see you guys. And, you know, they keep their promise. They don't say anything. And they also hide it from the youngest, who's just mm-hmm. too little to hide that kind of a secret. And to understand that hiding a secret like that is better than telling the truth, even though honesty is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think in that situation, they made the best call.
Yeah, don't trust Matilda.
Yeah.
Robin Williams is working at the TV station, loading film onto a truck. And he stumbles upon a set where this super boring, like...
Beyond boring.
Like, public TV kid show. It's terrible.
It's an old man with figurines that are dinosaurs, and he's just talking about them.
Monotone. It's terrible. And he's just standing next to a guy, and he starts riffing, and...
Yeah.
Turns out he's talking to the CEO of the TV station, and...
He has no idea.
But later, it comes out, Robin Williams is playing around on set with the dinosaurs, and he starts making up, like, songs, which we do at Salem and Binks.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately.
So we're, in a sense, we're like Robin Williams. No. Yeah. And then Mr. Lundy is watching that, and he invites Robin Williams to dinner with him to go over his plans for putting him on a TV show, which is, like, dream come true. Can you imagine?
Oh, my God.
If anyone, like, took a shot on you like that, like, just, like, hey, kid, you got something.
You insulted my show, and now I'm going to give you a job to make it better. Like, that's the ultimate, like, I mean, you hear stories about this in Hollywood. Yeah. It's, you're at the right place at the right time, and it worked out.
Oh, 100%.
That's really the only way anything gets done in that 100%. Town. I mean, we know this, so
just... Absolutely.
If it didn't happen like that, then it probably didn't happen, right?
Yeah. No. I mean, it's all luck.
Yeah. So.
And hard work. But you got to work hard and then get lucky.
Yes, exactly. So he invites him to dinner at Bridges, a restaurant, on Friday night at 7 o'clock sharp. By the way, Bridges, real restaurant.
Yeah.
Still the same.
Is it still?
It's still the same. I looked at it online. I'll post a link.
Is it? I want to look at their Yelp.
It looks just like it does in the movie, honestly. So meanwhile, back at the Hillard's house, Miranda is getting ready for her birthday, which is coming up also on Friday night, and says that Stu is taking her to a birthday dinner, and they're all invited, and Mrs. Doubtfire just has to come because she's a member of the family now.
Can't Mrs. Doubtfire say no?
Well, she tried to, and they were like, you have to go. And then little baby Mara Wilson was like, you have to go. You just have to go. And it was like, well, I can't say no to that.
Can't say no?
I can't say no to that little face.
I mean, he can't say no because then where would the plot go? But
yeah, where would it go? Exactly. Too perfectly.
One review on Yelp about Bridges.
Oh.
No Mrs. Doubtfire about it. This place is great. It's like.
This is a random side note, but I live for the moments when Miss Doubtfire brings up Winston, her like late husband that never fucking existed, of course. And it's just like he just does it to fuck with her.
Yeah.
That's when you're seeing those moments of like Daniel just fucking with her.
Yeah.
Like I love it. I don't know.
No, it's the what did she say? Like the
it was hit by a Guinness truck.
Yes.
So it was quite literally the drink that killed her. And you know he's just secretly patting himself on the back on the inside. But then, like, just fucking with her and trying to make... He's using this fake late husband concept to make her feel bad about moving forward with Stu. It's gonna go nowhere.
No, after Winston died, lifetime of celibacy. Yeah. It's like... Or else you will rot in hell. It's just like something like,
just so.
It's like something so an ex-husband, like a bitter ex-husband, I should say, would say to
totally,
his wife. Yeah,
totally. Like, nope, you can't be with anybody else. Just period. Like,
no.
Oh my God, it was too good. It was so good. And I love when they're choosing the dress to go out to the restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
Because he just tries to shut down these pretty sexy dresses she wants to wear. And Lydia's reaction is great because she knows.
Yeah.
This is my dad trying to not get my mom to go out on this like date night thing. And it's like, I know. And I can't say anything.
Oh, and he picks out the ugliest dress.
Like, this is the one you should wear. And she's like, I wore that to a funeral. Like, not wearing that. And he's just like, dress like a harlot. That's my opinion. Yeah. Dress like a harlot if you want. Like, oh my God.
Yeah. Or it's like the really, it's a really short dress. And he's like, oh, I hope you waxed. It's
like, just trying to kind of throw any jab at her when it's involving Stu. Any other time, it's like, I'm going to do the make you feel good game and play it up and kiss your ass and like be the best housekeeper and the best cheerleader I can be. But if you want to date the Stu guy, That's where my game falls flat.
I mean, that's a good divorced relationship. I mean, like, no romance, but still supporting each other, you know, and still, like, you know, I mean, I would hope.
You co-parent.
Yeah, you're co-parent, and, you know, you're still friends. Like, you can call upon that person if you need them. And
oh, yeah.
I hope by the end of the movie, or by the, you know, soon shortly after the movie ends, that those two characters are able to...
Yes.
You know, come together. Anyway, back to the restaurant.
Back to the restaurant. Daniel has to be at the same restaurant, same night, same time as two different people. Himself.
Dun, dun, dun.
Or Mrs. Doubtfire. So, it comes to the old classic switcheroo. This movie almost writes itself, right? And obviously this was foreshadowed because of how he handled the whole situation with Mrs. Sellner. He had to be two people at once.
Right. So, right. Yep.
That was the practice run.
A lot of the same physical comedy in the upcoming scene for sure.
Yes. Oh my God. Walk us through it, Ashley.
Well, I love, first of all, he's late to like the most important meeting of his life.
Yeah.
Instantly, no go.
That's the one he chooses to be late for.
Yeah.
Not the dinner with Stu.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I guess because they drove, but then like I'd be like, I gotta go to the bathroom right now. Instead, he goes to the bathroom and makes a call to the restaurant to say, I'm gonna be late. I would have used that time to be like, hey, Mr. Lundy, what up?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
This is the part where it really became clear to me. It's like, wow, like I remember watching this as a kid. It's like, oh yeah, you can go to the bathroom and change and come out real quick. Now I've put on latex and prosthetics.
Yeah.
That shit takes a long time.
Oh, I know. That's a funny thing too in this movie. That again, you just gotta go with it.
Yeah.
But it's that mask that they just like throw on and throw off. And it's like in reality, it took 4 hours every day to do 8 different pieces of latex and prosthetic all over. It was not a mask. The mask is just a prop.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that they just like gave it this simple quick fix.
Oh,
I mean, especially as a family film like that, if that was the direction they were going to go which they did, then it works. It really works.
Oh yeah. It was great. And, I love Mrs. Doubtfire says, like, the maitre d' is, like, smoking or non-smoking.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, smoking!
Yeah. Just so they're not in the same section of the restaurant.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. The restaurant scene is just so fucking good. Obviously, there's tension. There's suspense. You know it's going to go bad. It's a question of when.
Yeah.
How soon?
Yes.
How much longer can this go on?
Oh, God. Yeah. It was hard to watch
because
you're just sitting there and you're like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Just,
and to make it all the more fun, the stakes get raised because once Daniel goes and sits with Jack Lundy, he starts drinking scotch with him.
Oh, they're throwing it back.
And he's getting shit-faced.
It's
so, of course.
So funny. So Mrs. Doubtfire is shit-faced when she comes back.
Yes. So it's like, okay, she keeps getting up and disappearing for, you know, a number of excuses. Every time she comes back, it's like something either breaks or falls apart. And the teeth.
Oh, my gosh. Her teeth fall out into her Chardonnay.
Which it's was like, completely, like, they did not, like, that was Robin just doing shit. And their reactions were, like, so on point.
Yeah.
They were totally real. They were just like, oh, my God. You couldn't write this stuff. I mean.
Yeah, it's. I
dare you.
He gives a little shout out to, like, another movie he does.
Dead Poets Society.
Yeah, he's like, Carpe Diem sees the teeth.
Yeah.
And it's like.
Oh my God. And then Stu mentions a weakness. Stu has one weakness, everyone. Mr. Perfect is allergic to pepper. And, you know, Daniel's drunk. He's being an asshole. Mm-hmm. He's super jealous. At one point between his changing sessions, he runs into the kitchen and pours pepper onto his dish, knowing what table they were at and everything.
Yeah.
And he, like, totally to, like, sabotage him. And when you're drunk, you're not thinking straight of, like, how bad that could affect somebody.
And allergies, are come on a spectrum. Like, you can just sneeze, you can break out in hives, or you could go into shock.
Yeah, like, it could depend totally. So he probably didn't think it would be that. So he probably just, like, upset his eyes or something.
Yeah.
You know? So he just carelessly, like, puts pepper on there, thinks it's funny, runs out, being distracted with that.
And being drunk.
And being super drunk. He totally almost blows it by running to Jack Lundy's table as Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah.
And Jack is just like, who are you, ma'am? What can I help you with? Like, so confused until, you know, he's speaking in his normal voice. And Jack is like, okay, is Daniel? Is that you? Like, super confused. And that's when he just on the spot has to improvise. He's like, yep, I could be the new host for a new show.
This is your new host.
Yeah. Genius. Brilliant.
Oh, my God. Way to cover.
So good. Oh, my God. And then while he's pitching the show, of course, the worst happens. Stu starts choking, and it's actually very scary. I mean, this is James Bond we're talking about. You're seeing, like, Mr. I Can Do Anything choking in a restaurant.
It's the scariest. Have you ever been in a restaurant and seen someone choking?
No, I can't imagine it's time. It sounds fucking scary.
My first day in Italy, someone was choking on something, and no one knew what to do. We all just stood and looked, and he eventually got it up, but he turned red, and it was really scary.
Oh, poor guy.
And we all just started clapping, because like, what do you do in that situation? It's like, yay!
You live today!
Yeah, I can finish my ravioli and not feel guilty.
Yeah, isn't that wild?
Yeah.
That's such a sad way to go.
But thank God Mrs. Doubtfire was there to save the day.
Miss Doubtfire mentions when she's with Miranda in the kitchen as they're having tea on the first day when they're interviewing. She says, she hands her resume. On the resume, it says that she specializes in CPR. And she goes, you're an expert in CPR. And she just says, when you take care of little ones, you have to be prepared. And that comes full circle. Yeah.
Oh, and she goes, and the Heimlich remover. Yeah. Like, whatever she says.
And the Heimlich maneuver. Yeah. And it's crazy because she...
Yeah, that's so right.
Like, it was really a total throwback to the scene that she was going to have to use the Heimlich at some point. That's just good writing. That's good structure.
And so Stu is choking at the restaurant, and Miranda looks up and says, "Mrs. Doubtfire, help us," something.
And she runs immediately over, jumping over a ledge to get to him, which I loved that, because as much as he couldn't stand this guy, he could have just let him die.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, like, just been like, I don't know, because obviously, like, nobody knew it was him, making him choke. And he's just too much of a good guy to let that happen, that his instinct took over.
With all of the effort Mrs. Doubtfire is putting into, like, getting up this shrimp, which who swallows all the shrimp whole,
I mean, chew your goddamn food, James Bond.
Yeah.
Like, God, sorry.
Damn it.
I don't know what you think this shit is, but.
Yeah. The mask comes off and all is revealed.
It is the most epic reveal. It's the worst, like, low point in a movie. It's just so, so sad, because the other kids knew, and they're just, like, kind of lowering their heads. They just feel so bad, and, like, you're embarrassed for their dad. And then the little one is just immediately recognizes him and is, like, so confused and sad. And then, of course, freaking Miranda's losing her shit in two, thinking she had this, like, special bond.
The whole time?
Yeah.
The whole time? Yeah, that was so good. That was such, like, an acting thing, too. Yeah. Like, say one word different 10 ways. Like,
that was a great performance, truly.
I love you. I love you.
I love you.
Yes.
Best part, though, is when everyone storms out super angry, it's just Daniel and Stu standing there, and they just sort of have a bro moment where they just shake hands and sort of walk away.
Yeah, like, thanks for saving my life. It's like, sorry about everything. It's it's like.
And you could tell, like, in Pierce Brosnan's face, it's just like, that explains fucking everything, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. No questions asked there.
What, like, a cool dude. I hope they become friends.
I felt like they implied that it would still go on, like, Stu and Miranda, because in this, I didn't remember this until I rewatched it for this episode. They had a past. They were, like, old.
Oh, yeah.
They were, like, an old flame, and I didn't really think about it. I just thought,
college sweethearts.
Yeah, I just thought, this is, like, a colleague of hers. But I didn't realize they were, like, friends in college and obviously had, sweethearts, had some kind of fling or relationship or something. Yeah. So, I think I just totally missed that as a kid. You know, you pay attention to the funny stuff and you're not thinking about the details. But I like to think that they were meant to be.
Yeah.
You know?
And, like, one of the saddest scenes ever happens.
This is where you just cry. I mean, it was hard enough for the reveal, because you're like, now it's bad. But then you have to see it get bad.
And then it gets worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they go to court. It's, you know, they're finalizing the divorce. And as much as Daniel begs and begs and says, look, I met your requirements. You said, get a job, keep that job, have a home that's suitable for a family. I did it. And I'm being punished for that. I know my behavior isn't great. I would plead insanity because I'm insane for my kids. I'm crazy for them. All that being said, the judge rules against him, says you can only have supervised visitation rights. Mm-hmm. Essentially, he's hardly going to see them.
Yeah, it's so, so sad.
It's gut-wrenching. Like, and how Robin Williams plays it is just beyond
just a crushing. Couple, and the judge says, you know, you're a talented actor.
Oh my God. And it's just like, you know, and we talked about that in Mommy Dearest. This is another one of those moments where it's like someone's being accused of acting and they're not. They're doing everything they can to be taken seriously. You know, it's a little bit of that Boy Who Cried Wolf moment. It's just so sad.
You can see on Miranda's face, she's not happy with this. Or she's very conflicted with it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a little bit of regret, and I think Miranda was realizing in that scene, maybe I'm taking this too far. You know, I've asked for enough, I've asked for a lot, but like maybe taking him completely away from the children, is that the best idea? Like she sort of seems like she was questioning it.
Yeah, because it's what she wants, but is it best for her children? And I think in an upcoming scene, we really see that come out. Anyway, but following that, it's the kids at home and they're really trying to adjust. They're all cooking a meal together and Miranda's like on the phone and she's adjusting to like being this working mom and also like being this, you know, this homemaker, and she's struggling, obviously.
Yeah. And everyone they've interviewed sucks.
Yeah. You know? And it's just they're awful. Just kind of going around like, I miss her jokes. I miss her cooking. And it's just like she wasn't real. And then you hear Mrs. Doubtfire's voice.
And they get all excited.
Yeah. And they go into the other room and she's on TV. And like they.
So
yeah.
Cool.
Mrs. Doubtfire, she got her show. Or he, Daniel got the show.
Yeah.
And.
It's a sweet moment because they're kind of so depressed. And they're also like you can tell Miranda's like mad at him, but she does get why he did what he did. And then when they just have this like kind of not a comic relief, but just like a release when that show pops up on their TV.
Yeah.
Like they run in there, and they just start giggling. They're enjoying her, you know, it's like all this time they felt so sad that she wasn't real. And then it's like, surprise, she is. Mm. We cut to being on set of the, you know, Mrs. Doubtfire's show, and it's going really well. They're hitting the charts, they're getting all the ratings they wanted. It's better than they thought. And Miranda visits, and there's this scene between Miranda and Daniel. Mm. And it's also another, like, kind of sad, very real scene where they just sort of talk about how it was hard for both of them on both perspectives. And it's just, like, realizing, like, shit sucks either way for either of them.
It's really interesting how they staged that scene, you know, like they're both standing on opposite sides of this fake home, you know, and it's just like,
Yeah.
It's just like, how do we like, you know, it's this, you know, stage, it's half of a home. It's like, how do we make this work? How can we make this, you know, cohesive and whole,
that's
for the kids.
Yeah.
And, Miranda kind of, you know, sees the light, but sees what's best for her kids is having, you know, the father in their life.
Yeah.
Not once a week and not by supervised visitation.
Yeah. She says to him, like, you need them and they need you. And so we kind of leave that from that scene and cut to her telling the kids there's a new nanny. Now be nice. You know, she's coming over or whatever. And like, kind of leads them to believe it's going to be another older lady. And they open the door and it's Daniel.
Yeah.
And it's just so, you're just like elated. You're like, oh my God, she gave him the job. Mm-hmm. Like she.
Yeah.
And it's great because now he has grown. He has his own stable job, which is still in his passion of what he does as an actor.
Mm-hmm. Everyone wins.
Everyone wins in that scenario. No, they do not get back together.
Yeah.
But it's still everyone wins without that having to happen.
And I think at the end when she invites him in, he goes, no, I'll stay outside.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like this, you know.
He learned his place a little bit.
Yeah. And, you know, she's kind of like, okay, like we're not there yet.
Yeah.
You know, there's still, and I liked that. I liked it's not like, hey, we're just like, we're all good friends. Like, no, you know, we still have like more room to, you know,
to grow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As just co-parents.
Mm-hmm.
And then, there's this voiceover that happens. Mrs. Doubtfire, the TV show, is playing in the background. And I actually have a story about this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a letter Mrs. Doubtfire is reading on air. And it's a a girl's writing about her divorced parents and how she feels like it's her fault and what can she do. And Mrs. Doubtfire says that this line at the very end, just because your parents don't love each other anymore doesn't mean they don't love you. And I was talking to someone about, like, oh, I'm doing this movie. Mm-hmm. They are a child of divorce. And, like, we're about the same age. And their parents have been divorced since, like, they were, like, 7 or 8. Like, pretty young.
Okay.
And they were telling me, like, that line in that movie made their situation so much better. Aww. It was just, like, you know, like, there's still – and it was just, like, oh, my God. Like, I remember watching that and be like, oh, that's like, that's
great. Yeah, like, it's like, but, it affected us. And yeah. We never were children of divorce, but yeah. I'm glad to hear that it, like, did something for a child that was.
Yeah, like, and I imagine, like, other people must watch this and, like, you know.
And it's, for parents going through it, too.
Yeah, I don't think there's enough.
Yeah. Movies that shed light on this, do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. Divorce positive movies.
And I think just, the 90s was like a time when people were starting to really acknowledge that divorce is so common.
Yeah.
And that it's not, you know, that there's anything wrong with that. Now it's like, that's just not even like, it's just, unfortunately, it's actually quite normal. But yeah. I think then we were realizing like, this is a thing that can happen and that can be good too, you know? But instead of focusing, like, instead of like, television shows, movies focusing on that and really shedding a light on like that experience. Mm-hmm. I think instead what they'll do is they'll normalize it to the point where it's just not acknowledged and they'll just throw it in there. Like, oh, it's just a single mom.
Yeah.
Or, oh, it's just a single dad. Mm-hmm. You know, and instead of going like they split up and that's part of the situation, a lot of times it's just like it's not acknowledged at all. Mm-hmm. So I think there should be a little bit more balance, like you're saying, like every now and then, you know, that's an important subject to be discussed that probably just isn't getting discussed enough.
This movie just does it so well.
Right.
And the ending, well, what did you think of the ending?
I absolutely loved it. I usually tear up at it.
Yeah.
I honestly do. I think it was brilliant for them to not have them get back together.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was brilliant for them to say those lines of, you know, as long as there's love, that's what makes family. And also, Mrs. Doubtfire reminds everyone that a family is not always, you know, a mom or dad, of course, but sometimes people live with their aunts or uncles. Sometimes people live with their grandparents. Sometimes kids are in foster homes.
Yeah.
You know, it's an array of things. And like, I thought just even those lines were so important. And it was like, that's the point of this movie.
That's the heart of this movie is that.
Yeah. And it's so interesting to think that they had all these other different versions. I cannot really imagine a better version.
Yeah.
I can't. This ending was perfect.
I have to say this is probably one of my favorite movies.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just,
it's beyond.
It's, yeah. It's
brilliant.
Great.
And just so much talent.
Yeah.
So from every single actor in this. There's not one bad actor.
No.
And it could have been that way, you know. Sometimes you work with children. They're
And the film not always won an Academy Award for Best Makeup.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. So, it just, I mean, I'm those awards surprised. Don't matter, but it's all political.
It's all political.
But I mean,
no, that doesn't surprise me. It was it was completely
it was great,
incredible.
Any more final thoughts? This movie kind of made me want to move to San Francisco, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, you know, I went there. God, I haven't been there in years. But when the first time I went to San Francisco, I was like in fourth grade, and I thought about that movie the whole time.
Really?
When I was there.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so cool.
Because I remember like having had seen it already, and I thought it was so beautiful, and it looked like the movie.
It's one of my favorite cities.
Yeah.
Christian and I talk about moving there.
I loved that they set it there instead of Hollywood. It could have been so easy to set, you know, any show business story in Hollywood or New York, too. I was glad it was somewhere different a little bit. I think it played a role in at the end of the day, just letting you know subconsciously, this is a little different, the story.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I liked that.
So, so good.
Oh, my God. God,
he brought so much joy into so many lives.
He really, really did.
And still does.
Yeah. That's the greatest thing about being an actor like that, especially being in film. We can relive your performances time and time again.
This is a fun one. I feel like last time drinking while watching Mommy Dearest was a necessity. But yeah. This one, you're having a good time.
Yeah, this one is a laugh. This is a ball. This is easy. The other time it was like, oh, child abuse. Yeah. Take a shot. Why don't you kick it off?
I would like to say take a sip every time Mrs. Doubtfire says something cutting to Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, yes. That yes. jab game. It's yes. on. Yes, ooh, yes. I like that. Take a sip.
Take a sip.
Anytime Daniel, aka Mrs. Doubtfire, brings up Winston, just to fuck with Miranda's head, just fake ass Winston, take yeah. a sip.
Take a sip.
What about every time you see an iconic San Franciscan?
Oh, take a shot.
Yeah,
take
a shot. Iconic San Franciscan landscape or monument. Or
take a sip. Take shot or sip. You up to your discretion.
Take a sip. When during the montage where he does voices for Mrs. Selner.
Yes.
Just drink your drink that whole sequence. Until he's a hot dog, then you gotta yes. drink your drink.
Oh my god.
From I do voices to I do a great impression of a hot dog. Get it.
That's
girl.
So good.
The run by fruiting. Take a shot when oh, Daniel that's hits good. James fucking Bond in the back of the head. With a freaking avocado or a lime or whatever. Oh, man.
So good.
It's a run by fruiting. So for each fake call that Daniel gives to Miranda about these fake-ass nannies he's playing, take a sip for each one of them.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Oh, maybe, like, you should take a shot when you hear, hello!
Yes. Whenever you get a sense they can't make this movie today.
That should be a Salem and Binks present drinking rule, no matter yeah, what yeah. movie we are talking
can't
about.
Can't make this movie today.
Can't make this movie today moment. You take that shot. You enjoy it and you savor it.
Nina, this has been a great fifth episode. Thank you everyone for listening. Thank you for following us on social media.
Yes.
For downloading the podcast, for commenting on the podcast. We really appreciate all of your feedback.
Anytime you guys have suggestions for other episodes that are festive, holiday-related films, definitely hit us up. Let us know. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Pinterest, and Facebook.
Nina is, oh my god, the content on there, guys, is on fire. If you're not following us, you're not living.
Don't forget to subscribe on the website, salemandbinks.com, or become a member, which is even more fun.
Yeah, the emails are great. I love them.
I'm so glad. Want to say a shout out to, of course, my co-host Ashley, and Fiona, our producer, who's walking around about to step on this laptop right now. Ooh, come here.
Delete all. What?
Shout out to my big brother and our big sponsor, Bijan Sharifi, hooked us up with this equipment. You know what I love is when it's actually like a sad moment when he's leaving the house and he's packed up all his things and he, saying goodbye to the kids and then behind them is like their grandmother who is mom. And we never hear her say anything. She's just, there must have been deleted scenes with her. I'm just assuming. But she's just standing there like watching him say goodbye to his kids. And like he says something to Mara Wilson and little Natalie. Oh, Natalie says to him, you know, who's going to read Charlotte's Web with me? And he goes, well, your grandma can read it with you. And she's like, but she smells bad. And he goes, that's the formaldehyde. That's what keeps Granny so well preserved. Just gold. Yes. Just unnecessary gold. Like, yes. And I'm Persian. I love unnecessary gold. Oh. So the jam of jams to me.
Unnecessary gold. That needs to be like a slogan.